I want to talk a little bit about something that is an issue for many of us. I call it the issue of being seen. For some people, to be seen is all they want. I think a lot of people think that if somebody could truly see them, they would really love them. And at the same time, probably for an equal number of people, and maybe even for some of those same people, being seen is one of the most terrifying things imaginable. In fact, in much of our culture, we do a lot to deflect being seen. We create an image. We create a form. We create a mask or a presentation that really makes sure that people don't see us. They see what we want them to see and not who we are. And we do that as a kind of protection, because we often think if people see us, they won't love us. They won't like us even. Because many of us, starting early on, start to hide ourselves from people. And we hide ourselves for a lot of reasons. One of them is because we find people judging and rejecting us for parts of ourselves that we don't yet know are not presentable or likable. Our parents have a big hand in that. Our friends have a big hand in it. They all basically say, "Ooh, I don't want to know that about you," or "Don't tell me that." And that's very scary to the psyche. It immediately says, "Okay, put that one in the basement." And then you get to have a whole storage basement in the basement of you that isn't presentable. The world should not know that part of you. And then you kind of keep the door locked, you kind of keep it hidden. And it can be stuff quite innocuous, and it can also be stuff fundamental, but whatever it is, it's you that's being locked in the basement. And after a while, there becomes this idea for many people that the only part of you that can be embraced is the presented image. And the height of that really is, in a sense, the celebrity and this idea of dark glasses that people wear when you're really a celebrity or pretending to be one. Because what does that do? It really, truly prevents you from being seen. And really, being seen is a function of looking into your eyes. It's not a matter of looking at your presentation, because we've all been to whatever store we went to and bought the clothes that we want people to perceive us as wearing. We've all had our haircuts, and we've all had whatever we can do to keep us somewhat presentable in the world. So where can you hide? You really hide behind your eyes. That's the doorway. That's the access point to seeing somebody. And try looking into somebody's eyes. See how long they'll let you do that. Try it on the subway. Try it in a conversation with a friend, even. It doesn't last long. You do it for a few seconds, and there's this kind of looking away. Detachment, distraction, deflection. And we do that because we don't want to give access, and because it's private, it's personal, it's who we are in there, and we only want invited people to come in, and even people who are invited, even the people closest to us, our spouses, our children, our friends, our parents, we don't let in. When was the last time you took anybody that you loved closely and just spent time looking in their eyes? You know, one of the key marks of a of a love affair is two people gazing at each other. And that may be, other than this practice, the last time you were allowed entry into somebody. It may be ongoing, it may not, but for most people, it is a rare event. Simply looking at another person for more than the allowed, what is it, a second and a half? Looking at someone for longer than that is considered a kind of social crime, a lack of etiquette. And so here we are, walking into what we call an eyes-open meditation. And an eyes-open meditation is what? It's simply looking into someone's eyes for a much longer period than is allowed in the culture. You can call it mystical and you can call it magical. We give a lot of power to the person who initiates this process, the teacher. But in truth, I don't know if it would be any less strong with any other person. I don't know that you need a teacher looking into your eyes. I think if you could find permission from any other human being to just look, just sit together and gaze at each other for any period of time, I think you would find all of the dynamic that occurs in this class occurring. And it wouldn't be necessarily spiritual or metaphysical, but it would be very powerful, because you would actually find in yourself, when that happened, where the fear rises. It's really interesting. What happens when you sit with another person and you look in their eyes, other than lovers, is you can go for so many moments, and then this thing starts to happen, this enormous sense of self-consciousness, this sense of discomfort, this sense of uh-oh. Like you cross a line, you cross a boundary where you're seeing too much. You're in too deep. And you don't trust. And something in you starts to shut down. It starts to create a kind of resistance, a resistance to intimacy, a resistance to being seen. And that resistance is what comes up even in our meditation. As you practice over the years and you find someone that you truly trust, like a Rudy in your life, and you sit down and you open to that, you feel a number of things happening. One is a huge desire to run in any direction you can possibly go, and yet you're not being allowed to because this is an eyes-open meditation. And then you have this desire to please something, help you to withstand the gaze of this teacher. And Rudy said what you do at that moment is you ask for help to surrender. Well, what are you surrendering? You're surrendering this terror of being seen, of allowing someone entry into you. And so you sit there with this teacher looking at you, and you feel everything in you wanting to run, and then you start to ask for help, and something happens. You allow them entry. You allow them deeper and deeper entry until it hits something in you that is so raw and so fundamentally obstructed. And this person is gazing at you and they're not giving up. And something in you doesn't know what to do, and suddenly it just goes, oh! It just lets go. It lets go of its tension. It lets go of its holding power. It expresses something you can only call trust. Allowing. And you allow this person to pass through a barrier in you. And they go deeper. And as they look deeper into you, of course, you're also, in a certain sense, looking deeper into yourself. Because having someone look at you forces the issue. You have to look as well. The great thing about a teacher-student relationship, particularly in this practice, is that it pushes the boundaries deeper and deeper and deeper. Why is that valuable? Why would one even want to do this? Because it's often so scary and so uncomfortable. This experience of being seen and of ultimately seeing yourself is the experience of liberation. It frees you from image, from the mask, from the obsession with your presentation. It frees you from being outer directed. It allows you to touch something, or if you will, see something within you that is so exquisite and beautiful, so alive and present, that you have always just taken it for granted, but you haven't looked at it at all. Most lives are not lived with any kind of insight. Most lives are lived completely directed to the world around us. And that lack of insight causes a kind of starvation, a kind of hunger, a kind of unreality, a kind of living in touch with the surface of things and not the depth of things. And so this idea of sitting with a teacher and being directed inward is giving somebody the power to help you see yourself, to see this exquisite sense of being that is inside you. And a teacher who truly, truly sits with you and deeply opens to you will carry you on a journey through all of your resistance, through all of your fear, through all of your hesitation, through all of your obstruction, and with your allowing this, will carry you to you. You will be seen. One of the things you realize when you are seen is that you're not so much being seen by this outside force. You are being seen by your own inner light, your own inner self. And another thing you realize is that this light is always shining and you are always being seen. That there is a clarity of observation within you at any given moment. The tragedy of human life is that we don't look for that. To be seen, to be known, to be embraced by this sight is all we want in human experience. And yet, taking a human being and turning them around so that they look inward, so that they begin this journey of seeing themselves, is one of the hardest things imaginable. If it was easy, everybody on this planet would be doing it. But we are all propelled into the world of form and image and, if you will, illusion. And we're all very, very resistant to turning this around. The extraordinary part of human life is that turning it around and seeing yourself or being seen by yourself is not hard to do. It takes no time, it takes no effort. You just do it. You just go, aha. And you remember yourself. Yourself is glowing and radiating within you at every instant. So here you are living this life out of touch with that. And in a certain sense, there's a kind of deep sadness about that, because this light is what nurtures and feeds and makes you whole. So when you live without it, there is an extraordinary sense of dis-ease, detachment from something meaningful, a kind of meaninglessness in your existence. And what does it take to turn around, or to step back, or to feel this light in you? What does it take? something reminding you to do it. Something in you or outside you saying, look inside. Look at your own inner light. See yourself. Be seen. And when does that happen in your life? Well, for some people, it's just a natural calling. That's what they do. Some people walk around basically expressing this hunger to be seen, this openness, this availability. But for some people, it's the tragic event. It's the deep, deep suffering in life where you realize that life doesn't have the answers for you, where life in a way is betraying you. People who suffer in a big way realize they can't look outward as far as they can tell for this solace. They might get a little bit from people. Often when people are suffering very greatly, people turn away from them, so they can't find it. And that's often the spark for going in, for saying, I can't fight this anymore. I can't fight this obstruction. I can't fight my own limitation, my own inhibition, my own separation from life. And you start to turn inward, and this light shines forth. Many people touched by tragedy express a kind of clarity about life, a kind of depth in their in who they are and in how they present themselves to the world, because they've touched something alive and vibrant. They have seen themselves. But you can also just get it from something in you saying, I want to see. I want to see. It's a kind of rational awakening. You go, something is missing, I want it. And you can begin to look for a teacher. You can begin to look for somebody to help you do this. And often it is outside you, something outside you that turns you inward. For me, truly, it was Rudy. You know, Rudy sat me down on the subway grating on a folding chair outside his store. He just looked into my eyes and said, ask for help to surrender. Draw this energy in and feel it go deep into your chakras. I didn't know what chakras were. I didn't know what energy was. I didn't know what was going on at all. But I knew as I sat on that subway grating, he was looking at me in a way no human being had ever looked at me before. And I felt something going on that was inexplicable, that brought up a kind of delicious kind of joy and sense of arrival, and also a sense of terror. It used to be so frightening for me that I used to not be able to walk into Rudy's store. I would walk around the block 4 times before I could actually walk into his store. Why? Because I was going to be seen. You know, the crazy person who was coming off the subway, who was going to go sit with Rudy for 5 minutes, I didn't want to present that to Rudy. Why should he see this in me? Of course, he saw it more than anybody. And he did the one thing that is most important in being seen. He loved me in spite of what he saw. He also saw me past the craziness, past the insanity. I mean, he knew the insanity was there. He said it. He said, you know, you're really insane. And I knew it. But he didn't care, because he also knew that in seeing deeply into any human being, you see one thing, which is yourself. That's all you see. You see the same thing. If you look deeply into any person, what do you find but God? Period. How do you not love that? How do you not love that within each person? It's so beautiful and it's so wonderful. And the only thing standing between you and them, or you and God, if you will, is this insanity of misunderstanding, of misperception. This thing that's fighting like mad not to see that. And you look at them and you go, why would you not want that to be seen? Why would you not want someone to see God in you? Why? Well, you have to say, because you're insane. You're totally crazy. You don't get it. And most people don't get it. And most people live a life that's full of shame or guilt or such distraction that when the light of God starts to shine, you feel so humbled by it, humbled and shamed by it. It's not what God wants. God, you know, we're here to have this experience of being, but we have this choice of how to live, and a lot of us don't live well. And if we don't live well, we create karma. Karma is just consequence that creates more and more density and separation, if you will, from ourselves. And so when someone starts to dig through that, it's like, oh my God, all that layering of real shit inside you. And you don't want that to be seen. But the courage to say, see me, move through that, is what you bring to a teacher. A great teacher sees like a laser beam right through all that stuff. And that stuff is not, as Rudy would say, special. Everybody has it. Everybody is layered with shit. And if you just take the laser and you cut through and cut through and cut through and cut through and cut through, you get to the exact same place, which is this place of unbearable beauty in every human being. I really think each of us could try just sitting with another human being and looking in their eyes. And experiencing the wonder of spiritual connectivity, of communion. If you can find another person who's willing to give you that moment, who's willing to allow you that entry, what you find is the possibility of God awakening in both of you. Because that's all it is. All life is God seeing itself. That's all it is. And what does it see itself through? Through each of our eyes. And as we look at each other and we see one another, finally, we see the oneness of existence. And spiritual work is nothing but seeing. So when you find yourself looking away from anybody's gaze, feel the deep human hunger for being hidden, and then watch how it plays out inside you. And don't judge it and don't be critical. Just know that you too are human, but that you also allow yourself once a week to come somewhere and be seen. That gives you an enormous advantage, if you will, because it really gives you an opportunity to have something that many people don't experience even once in a lifetime. And then you also have the additional opportunity of sitting every day. And what do you do when you sit every day? You look at a photograph. That's what we do in this practice. We look at a picture of Rudy. Is Rudy looking back at us? Well, no, not really. Not in a photograph. So what are we seeing when we look at the photograph of our teacher? Well, you see yourself. You are reminded, yet again, to open and surrender to seeing you. Instead of having another person sitting there gazing into you, you have you sitting there allowing your own inner gaze to look into yourself. That's the practice. If you do that every day, what happens is you build this muscle, as Rudy called it, and you also build a channel that just, when turned inward, goes right through to the light. The incandescent luminosity of your being is there the second you turn inside and look for it. That's who you really are. That's who we all are. And if you see it in yourself, you will know how to see it in others. And if you see it in others, it will reflect it in you, and you will have what is the best of all human lives, a holy life, a spiritual life, a life about light, about sight, and about being seen. That's what we're here for. Any questions? George.
Can one work with a mirror?
You can. I've done that. It's a little distracting, you know, because it's a little bit odd, but I have done that, you know, just out of curiosity, and it's worth trying, you know, just sit there and look. But it kind of externalizes and internalizes simultaneously, and in a real sense,
you can.
I mean, but it can work. On the other hand, I have to say, working with another person, strange as it may be, is working with a mirror. That's really what we're doing. We don't know it exactly, but every person we're looking into is a mirror. We're so identified with our bodily self, but when the true inner light starts to look outward, it's everything it sees is itself. That's all it sees. Life is the mirror. And it's seeing itself continually, and it teaches and instructs and reveals its own light from every possible source until even physical space starts to break down into light. So often when you sit, there's no solid form left. It's just lumens, you know, everywhere. It's just all light, dancing particles of light. And that's what you see, light, light, seeing light, and then the thing in between kind of dissolves, and there's nothing but light. And that's who you are. That's your true nature. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, it's like a million suns rising at the same time. It's just pure luminosity. And that's you. That's who you are. We don't believe that, usually, as people, because we're still caught up in the physical body. But as you start to go deeper and deeper and deeper, which is what Rudy always said is our work, going deeper, the more light appears, and it shines out of you. It shines out of you through your life, through your day, through every moment that you're alive, as long as you're not shutting it back down again. And, you know, many of us do shut it back down again and then reopen it and shut it down and reopen it.
Everybody's ego is meant to look out.
Well, of course. It is. It is, because it has to function in this material space. So it's why it's a journey for all of us. All of us are born into manifestation. Then something starts to call us back, and we don't know what to do with that, and we're not always quite sure with that immaterial call what it means or why we're feeling it or how we do it or where it comes from. It's a very strange phenomenon being a human being, because we live kind of in two universes and maybe more, you know, but the material universe seems the most phenomenal and present. But in truth, the real presence is the thing that is observing that universe, that world, and we're not aware of it. We're only aware of what it's seeing, not of that which is seeing. And so that's the goal of our spiritual work, to be aware of that which is seen, the process of seeing, and the seer, and seeing them all as one whole. Because it's not divided up as it appears to be. It's just one thing. And the mind can't have a clue to what that means. It can never understand what that means. It's so big. It's so beyond the singular mind's capacity to comprehend, that all you can do is let go of even the need to understand and then just be with it.
Because of fear of separateness.
Yes. Yeah.
Gotta keep that separateness.
Right. We're deeply afraid of separateness. We're deeply afraid of being, you know, cut off. And yet what most of us are, most of us experience as a daily experience, is separateness, which is where all of our fear comes from. It's all of our running away and hiding comes from this sense of I don't want to be. It's like getting under the covers. You know, as a kid, you hide under the covers because you're so afraid of whatever other is there. But the otherness is you. It's just you. And finally realizing that and accepting that and opening to it is a way of seeing life, seeing what's really there. And what you see ultimately is that you're it. This is you projected. Not you, George.
You, us.
And George is a part of that, and a very important part of that. But George is dealing with this in the fear mode, I mean, as are we all, because how does this work? Why don't I understand it? Because nobody understands it, and because it works. And if you ever do understand it, it won't be a cognitive experience. It'll be something totally other. It's a kind of, it's just beyond words and beyond mind. You just know what it is, because you're it. And that's what we're all working toward, inch by inch by inch. And it is a kind of inch by inch thing, and it is a life's work. And when you think about it, George, you've been doing this your whole life. Really. You know, and it's not like there's a measurement. It's not like there's, you know, you have to get here or get there. It's what your life is about. It truly is what you've been doing. You know, and this is a very big deal. At some point you realize, this is my life's work. It's what I've been, it's what I do. You do a lot of other things, but somehow you bring yourself to this over and over and over. And what you're bringing yourself to is this rare human experience called communion. Being seen. Being available. And that's what, it's the best thing we do in life, because it's the most freeing of everything we do. It gives us wholeness when everything else gives us separateness. And we're hungry for it. Anybody else? Okay. We'll have class next week and the week after, and then a break of a couple of weeks when Blanche and I go to L.A. And then it gets confusing, and we'll take it week by week. Thank you, guys. Mm-hmm.